Thank you for being faithful to what God has called you to. I often reflect, and I really do this. I'm not just saying it, but every time that I read through Paul's letter to the Philippians, and I come across some of his opening lines, he says this: "Whenever you cross my mind, I thank my God for you and for the gift of knowing you. My spirit is lightened with joy whenever I pray for you." And we do pray for you. We do remember you and pray for you because you have partnered, Paul's saying, because you have partnered with me to spread the gospel since the first day I preached to you. You need to know that that is the reflection of our heart. And so we thank God for you and we pray for you. Many of you we know from very special situations and very special ways. And so we're thankful to God for that. That's nothing that anyone can ever take away. So thank you. Thank you. I spent this last week in London, Ontario, of all places. Boy, that's the highlight of the world. And is somebody from London? I'm trouble now, eh? Well, I spent the week there. I'm on the board of the Four C's, the Canadian Council of Christian Charities, and they provide Christian oversight in financial and stewardship matters to charities and nonprofits across Canada. And so I was at their convention, and they had groups from all over. There were just over 400 people there. And it was really interesting because there were groups from... they sort of did an amalgamated conference this year, and they had the Canadian Association of Pregnancy Crisis Support Services group there, and so of course these are people that are right to life people, strong, bold people in that regard. But then they also had aligned themselves or had invited the ecumenical. Let me see if I get this right. The Ecumenical Leadership Stewardship Services from the United States. And this was a group of people who, in the grand scheme of things, would be more pro-choice in their affiliation. And I was there and I was attending this and I don't know where you stand on that. I would hazard to guess that I know where most of you would be. But I was there, and it was very interesting because both of these groups called themselves Christians. And yet they were theologically, morally, they were miles apart. And yet they called themselves Christians. And there we were at a Christian gathering, and there was great, great diversity. It was like there wasn't any clear statement about what a Christian is and why you can be here. So there I was, and we were there, and I thought, okay, so what am I gonna talk about this Sunday, and how might this reflect on what we talk about? I mean, we know that the church and the gathering of the church isn't just to get a bunch of people so that we can bless those who are already blessed, right? I mean, where in the New Testament do you find that? Where in the Old Testament do you find that? That we just gather because we're blessed and we want to be blessed some more. There's got to be some kind of outreach component in these kinds of things. One of the great lines heard in the church is that when our churches are designed just to meet our needs, the words that we hear most often are, "I'm not being fed." Has anybody ever said that? Have you ever heard that? Somebody somewhere saying, "I'm not being fed," as if that's the role of the church, just to feed people more? How can that happen? How can that be? We serve a Lord who came to give us abundant life, not just to bless us because we're already blessed. It almost seems like a challenge, doesn't it, or a contradiction. We seem to have funny ideas about what a Christian is. We don't really have a clear definition. Do you know the word Christian was really only used 3 times in the whole New Testament? And only usually as a word that non-believers used to describe those who would follow Christ. Jesus never called believers Christians. He never gave a definition to that word. And so as we gather here today, are we Christians? Well, I don't know. Depends on the definition, I guess. It's not like we might define a Canadian. What's a Canadian? A. Right. So we would probably have some idea what a Canadian is, or we might have a good idea of what an American is, or a, well, you name it. You know, maybe a Baptist. Do you know what a Baptist is? Do we want to know what a Baptist is? Maybe not. But there's probably clear definitions for lots of these words, but there isn't necessarily a clear biblical definition of what a Christian is. Because Jesus never gave us one. He never said, Christians will do these things. I mean, sometimes in my weaker moments, I think, wouldn't it be great if we had a, you know, if we had a scroll that came down from heaven with a list? You know, I sort of like lists sometimes, you know, do this, do this, do this, do this, whoop, you slipped up on this, well, I can pick up my socks and and do this better. But there really isn't that clear definition. So it seems by lack of definition by Jesus, we can be anything we want. And as you look around our world, you know what? Christians are anything they want. I mean, I was at the seminar this week, and there were people on either ends of the poles claiming that they were Christians, and they were totally in different spaces. And yet if you stood up and said you're not a Christian, you'd be in trouble, you know? And in fact, there were a bunch of people from the States who were part of the ecumenical group who would not come to the conference because of the Canadian Association of, what did I say it was? Pregnancy support people that were there. And I thought, well, and much of the, many of the lectures in the seminar were about how as Christians we have to work together. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? We can work together as long as we agree. But as soon as we disagree with somebody on some point, you know, we're done. So we have Christians on both sides of the fence. At this conference, I sat at a table at the banquet next to a lady who had actually run for the United States Senate. And she was from Alabama, and she had run for the Senate, and she was a Democrat, a Christian Democrat. I mean, she had gone and met with Hillary. She had gone to the White House when she was running. Hillary wanted her to help her out, and she went. She met with Hillary and a whole bunch of Democratic people who had the ways of supporting you. And Hillary told her, "Listen, you're going to need some money, but don't worry at all. I've got these funding packs. You know, you've heard of the super PACs." Where people pour money into them to help people out. Anyway, so this lady, she had millions of dollars directed her way to run for the Senate. Of course, Alabama's a very Republican state, so she lost. But nonetheless, she was there, she had all that opportunity, and she made claims to be a Christian. And yet at the same time, there are all these other people in the States, and you know this, they call themselves Republicans, and they lay claim to the evangelical Christian world, and they make statements about who they are, and they claim to be Christians. And so you've got Christian Democrats and you've got Republican Democrats. Which ones are the Christians? And where do you go to find the definition to describe them and to define them? Well, it's almost impossible to find that.
We don't have that. If Jesus had left a checklist, it would be much easier. You've probably heard the story about a lady by the name of Anne Rice. Anybody know Anne Rice? Does that name jump to your mind? Yes. And have you read most of her books?
And the new ones.
Oh, and the new ones. Okay, and the new ones. Just in case you don't know, Anne Rice was known as the writer of mythical, gothic, steamy mysteries. Have you ever heard of the vampire series? Anne Rice wrote those. She's written over 37 books. She's published over 90 million books. Just think, you know, if the author gets $1 or $2 for every book, I don't know how much they get, but 90 million of them, she's done pretty well. She grew up in a devout home, and she was reared in a place where she heard the Christian claims, Christian messages, and she was a devout child. For years, she followed that. But then, you know, she got into her teenage years, maybe close to 18, and something happened. All the things that she heard the people in the pews talking so nicely about and saying and claiming and doing all of these things, all of a sudden when she went out and lived in life, she saw that it wasn't so. She saw that most of those people who were making those claims didn't follow through with the things that they were claiming. And she said that she had a violent separation from the Christian faith. Because she saw that so many people making so many claims, it was just the platitudes, the nice things to say at the right times. And she left. She couldn't stand it. So she took off and she spent many years until she was 50 or so, wandering around, making gazillions of dollars. But in the midst of that, in the midst of her life, she lost her daughter at a young age to a disease. She lost her husband to a brain cancer. She lost her own personal stability to a case of OCDC that put her into treatment. And it was terrible. I mean, she had a tough, tough life. It totally debilitated her. Her life is one that none of us would want to emulate. But you know what? She came back to Christianity in her 50s. Amazing. She came back and she remained a Christian for about, you know, 10 years. And then in 2010, on her Facebook page, she wrote, "Today, I quit being a Christian. I quit being a Christian. I'm out. I remain committed to Christ as always, but not to being a Christian or to being part of Christianity. It's simply impossible for me to belong to this quarrelsome, hostile, disputatious, and deservedly infamous group. For 10 years I've tried. I've failed. I'm an outsider. My conscience will allow nothing else." How can this be? How can that happen in a person's life? There's such confusion about the role of a Christian. Some say proud and compelling things, but others who claim to be Christians claim the exact opposite. And to make matters worse, they then take on others who state otherwise with, as Anne Rice says, quarrelsome, hostile, disputatious words. I guess the difficulty is that as a Christian, a Christian was never really defined in the New Testament. So what do we go on? We can make significant claims about what we believe, but does that accomplish what we want? The claims that we often declare make great paper copy, but they don't translate into real life. I don't know. Have you ever experienced that? Have you ever seen that? Has that ever been part of your life? You don't want to give up Christ, but yet it just doesn't seem to be panning out. I don't know if that's the right word. Anyways, Anne was deluged with letters from others who said that they had been Christians, who said that they knew what she was saying, they agreed with her, and they supported her. And she responded on her Facebook page that she didn't know that she had joined another group. Because it seemed like it, there was a whole other group of people ready to join her and draw her in. So what do we do with that? Well, I don't think we go back to the New Testament and look for the right definition of what it is to be a Christian. I think we go back and we look at what Jesus called us to. What did Jesus say about people who would be followers? And what are they called? Yes, but there's a... Disciples, absolutely. And I know you folks have been looking at this to a degree. And I noticed when I came in that is it your slogan now? Disciples making disciples? Well, that's what Jesus called us to. And in the next couple minutes, when does church end here? 12 o'clock? Old habits die hard. Anyways, just let me read to you what Jesus said we ought to be doing. And he said, Jesus said, I am speaking with all the authority of God who has commanded me to give you this commission. Go out and make disciples in all the nations. Ceremonially wash them through baptism in the name of the triune God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Then disciple them. Form them in the practices and postures that I have taught you, and show them how to follow the commands I have laid down for you. And I will be with you day after day to the end of the age. If Jesus didn't call those who would follow him Christians, why should we? He called them disciples. Jesus wasn't so concerned, I don't think, about the ongoing teaching. Because discipleship was never, it was never about learning. It was about living. Living as disciples. You know, a disciple is one who follows, one who learns from. And Jesus was saying, tell people to learn from me. Not even learn from each other, as good as that can be in some situations, or as bad as that can be in other situations. Jesus says, follow me. Well, so that was the foundation of what happened. You know, and it worked really well. Those early disciples, they were disciples, and they taught each other what Jesus said. They taught others about the central truth of what Jesus wanted them. And think about dear John. John had been there. He had seen that. He had been with Jesus. He had watched him. He had been called the disciple that Jesus loved. And he went on, and over the years, he saw the things that happened. He saw the horror of what the Romans did. Anne Rice was also a great student of history, and so she started reading stuff about the Jews, because she thought, isn't this interesting? There's only a relatively few religious practices of antiquity that have lasted into this age without being significantly changed. And so she decided to study Judaism, and so she went back and she studied history And as she did, she read some of the people like Josephus. You can read the Jewish Wars. It started in about 64 AD until 70 AD when the Romans, the 10th legion came in and just stomped Jerusalem, put it under siege, killed all the people, crucified people, hung them on crosses in and out of Jerusalem. They burned the place. They destroyed the place. And she read that. And she thought, how come I didn't know about that? How come I'd never read about that? I got to go someplace where I can read about these things. So she said, I'm going to go back and read the Gospels because it's got to be there. Well, you know what? She went back and she read the Gospels and she found that there wasn't one reference to it. Because all of them happened, all the Gospels came before that time. And so they were writing, and the people that they were saying in the Gospels were eyewitnesses to the truth. Were in fact eyewitnesses who were still around. And they could see that,
You know, when John said that Jesus rose from the dead, nobody sat up and wrote another article to dispute it in the, you know, in the university, and they never said, well, that's just, because there were eyewitnesses. People saw it. People knew it was true. So that was one of the things that convinced Anne Rice that she was going to come back to her Christian faith. So about 400 years, things went on like that. The Christians were hiding. Their influence on people around was getting stronger and stronger. They were having an influence on people. And it wasn't until about 400 AD that the influence of the Christians changed. And you know why it changed? Constantine. Constantine finally said, Christianity is a legitimate religion. So what happened? What happened? Well, Jesus had said that they ought to go out and make disciples. John had written that we ought to love others. Jesus had said, this is the new commandment I give to you, to love one another. And so people had been living out the command of Jesus, loving one another. It wasn't like keeping the Ten Commandments. It was just keeping the one commandment that Jesus gave. Love one another. And what happened when Constantine took over? And Constantine made Christianity the legitimate religion of the empire? All of a sudden, the Christians didn't have to use love anymore. They could use power because they had power. And so rather than the statement of Jesus being love one another and love your neighbor as yourself and all of those great passages, all of a sudden the Christians could say, you must do this. You must follow these commands. You must live this way. These are the things that will identify you, not as a disciple, but as a member of the church and as a Christian. You know, it was interesting when I was at the dinner table at this conference, this one lady who is the senator tried to be the senator, she had left and she had gone back to school and she became a pastor. And she was a pastor now. And she was the pastor of two churches. One of them was the Presbyterian Church USA, and the other one was a Cambrian Presbyterian Church. Anybody heard of that? I hadn't heard of it either. Couldn't believe it. Well, not that I hadn't heard of it, but that there was this group. And you know what the difference was? And they had their own churches, and they had their own seminary, and they had their own whole stuff happening. And the difference was when the Pentecostal Church USA took communion, they gave the bread and the cup out at the same time. And the people took it together. The Cambrian Presbyterians, and it was important enough that they had their own church, seminary, own denomination, they would do it one at a time. Bread first, then the cup. They should have been Baptists, you know what I mean? I couldn't figure that out, but nonetheless. And so here you have these people building differences, and somebody had the power to say, we're going to do it this way. And it was enough to separate people. It was enough to divide people. Being a disciple is fairly well defined in the New Testament, and so many people would rather be a Christian than be a disciple. Because being a Christian, you can be anything you want, right? I mean, just look at our community of Kelowna. You can go and you can be multiple things in multiple places and still call yourself a Christian. You can even be on the fringe, whatever the fringe might be to you, and still be a Christian. However, you might not have, there might not be that case where you're doing what Jesus asked you to do. Let me read this verse to you in John 13:34. Jesus is recorded as saying, so I give you a new command. Love each other deeply and fully,
Remember the ways that I have loved you and demonstrate your love for others in the same way. Everyone will know you as my followers if you demonstrate your love to others. Or in a version that you might be familiar with, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So here we have John. He's getting to the end of his life. You know, it's maybe 50 years since Jesus died. And John is writing. And what is he going to write about? Well, he's going to write about Jesus' love, because that's important to him. And he said, I saw what Jesus did. I will never doubt what God has done in sending his son. He said, I learned a verse, and it was John 3:16. I wrote the verse. It was John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And John was writing that, and he was describing that. And, you know, as long as you want to call yourself a Christian, you can do just about anything you want. But when you call yourself a follower of Jesus, when you call yourself a disciple, it puts a different spin on everything. I promise I'm not going to go to 12. I'm going to wind this up. I believe that John was, as he was sitting there writing in his old age, and he came to 1 John 4:10, this is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and is atoning sacrifice for our sin. You know, John was so concerned about people loving and loving one another. And I'm sure that there were people who harassed him and said, oh, so loving one another is the way to go. How did that work out in Jerusalem, John? How did that work out with your friends, Matthew and Peter and all of those people who died at the hands of the Romans and others? How did this being loving work out? And I believe John said it worked out fine, you know, because God was in charge. God knew them. They were committed to what God had called them to. And look at the people who have come to know Jesus because of their life. I think John would be saying, I want your community to care for others so completely, so fully. I want your community, and I want you to care for others so completely, so fully, that everyone will see that you are living like Jesus. I don't want anyone to ever say that your church, I don't want anyone to ever say that you, I don't want anyone to say that my followers were ever known as quarrelsome, hostile, disputatious. Jesus is saying through John, I never want these words to ever describe people who follow me. For Jesus and for John, this is not just theory. He didn't want people to look back and say, you know, that he had just read the book. He wrote the book, and he was convinced that this is the real deal. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. Dear friends, we owe it to them. We owe it to God because he gave his son for us. I believe John would be saying, I wanted you to join others in such a way that other people would go, wow. Look how they loved. I want you to hear others or love others in such a way that they would say simply, the whole community has loved me in such a way that I want to be a part of that. I want you to love others in such a way that no one would ever say, I don't want to be a part of that group. Take this one command I give you, love one another. I don't think someone like Anne Rice would have quit being a Christian if she had found people living out that one new command. Forget the other 10 commands, but that one command that Jesus said to love one another. Maybe there is some, we all need to quit Christianity because we don't seem to live like we know what it is. And maybe we need to start once again being disciples. I don't think many people would quit becoming a disciple. They would say, wow, these people have loved me well. Wow, they just accepted me unconditionally. Wow, those people just forgave me. Wow, those people pardoned me. Wow, they didn't hold anything against me. Wow, they heard about my past, and it seems like it's a non-issue to them. I don't think people are inclined to quit that kind of thing. Can you imagine what our world would be like, what your neighborhood would be like, what your family would be like, if we were doing this and that we were living out the call of being a disciple, loving one another? We're going to come around the communion table, and one of the things that I want us to do is just simply remember that that's what Jesus is calling us to. So often we say the words of institution, do this in remembrance of me, and we fall into the trap of either the Cambrian Presbyterians or the PC Presbyterians of the USA, and we think do this in remembrance of me is do the bread first and then the cup, and then no, we do it together. But I think Jesus was saying, do this in remembrance of me, was love one another. That's what he was calling us to. Be my disciple. Love one another.